Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. There is no man alive, to my way of thinking, who has done more to help chronicle that war, certainly in the recent phases of it, than our first guest. He is Dr. Paul Kengor, a best-selling author, a professor of political science at Grove City College, where he actually heads its Center for Vision and Values. He is the author of more books than we have time to talk about here, though several of them are very relevant to the topic of the day. Paul Kengor, welcome back, I think, for the first time this year. Happy New Year. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Same to you, Frank, and you're way too kind and way too generous in your praises.
Oh, not hardly. I'm only getting warmed up. But listen, Paul, you must have taken considerable satisfaction from the, essentially, I guess, the lifting of the taboo that has been imposed on Barack Obama's personal history and background by Rudy Giuliani, who said what has largely been unsayable in polite society recently, in which he questioned whether the president actually loved America. And I want to talk with you about this partly because of the extraordinarily important work you've done on this subject yourself, notably in The Communist, Frank Marshall Davis, The Untold Story of Barack Obama's Mentor, and Dupes, How America's Adversaries Have Manipulated Progressives for a Century. What did you make of Rudy's remarks, and to what extent does your personal scholarship on the subject validate that the guy could hardly have a chance of loving America, given the kind of marinating he did in revolutionary, communist, and anti-American stews?
Yeah, well, great question. And by the way, the taboo will be totally lifted when finally somebody in the mainstream media asks Barack Obama about this directly. And you know, that still hasn't happened
yet. I'm not holding my breath.
Right. But Rudy was helping us get closer to it. And I think it was last Saturday, or it was over the weekend, and I got an email from a friend. He said, check out the Drudge Report. And there was a lead there on Rudy pointing to Obama's communist mentor. It was linked to a New York Daily News article. Now, the Daily News is the more liberal of the New York tabloids. And I don't know if you saw this article, Frank, but it was just sort of breathless, this liberal reporter on, how could this possibly be? Where's he coming up with this information, right? And then the next day, Drudge had a New York Post piece where Rudy said, in like one line, he said, look, President Obama was influenced in his youth by a communist named Frank Marshall Davis from the time he was 9 years old. And I thought, wow, you know, way to go, Rudy.
He got a breakthrough, to say the least.
Right, everything.
Yeah. And beyond the Frank Marshall Davis piece, and I do want you to explain a little bit more about that, but talk, if you would, as well about the folks that he went on to be tied to after Frank Marshall Davis that just compounded the problem.
Well, that's right. I mean, there's a series of individuals. I mean, Frank Marshall Davis, Bill Ayers, Bernardine Dorn, and, you know, he said
Rashid Khalidi, Jeremiah Wright. I mean,
Wright,
on and on.
Reverend Wright. In fact, the only person, Frank, in Dreams from My Father, who's mentioned more than Frank Marshall Davis is the Reverend Jeremiah Wright. And in fact, in Dreams
the
from
man
My
he
Father,
didn't really know so well once the question was put to him about his relationship with him.
That's right. That's right. And remember, too, what I think he told George Stephanopoulos in one of the debates, and Stephanopoulos got just creamed for even bringing this up. But he said, in mentioning Bill Ayers, he said, well, yeah, I was just 8 or 9 years old when Bill Ayers was bombing the Pentagon and attacking New York City and planting bombs and so forth. Well, yeah, but he was 40 years old when in the September 11th, 2001 edition of the New York Times, chillingly, Bill Ayers said in an article that appeared, it was a profile in the New York Times, that he had no regrets for setting any of those explosives. And Obama would have been 34 years old when he met with Bernardine Dorn and Bill Ayers in their living room. He would have been in his mid-30s. He would have been in the Illinois State Senate or about to go in when he was literally serving on boards and working with Bill Ayers.
Right, passing out money for community organizing, as I recall.
That's right. They had a working relationship as well as a friendship.
What this really does raise, I guess, for all of us is the question that we sort of started with, and that is, is there an explanation in all of this? The president's background, and we didn't even get into the time he was in an Indonesian madrasa, but
right.
The president's background of anti-Americanism, or at least influences that were rapidly anti-American, and the kinds of policies that we see him pursuing these days, the fundamental transformation of America, notably among them, but also his attitude towards an appeasement of the jihadists. Talk about that, if you would.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, a couple components to it. One, you know, Rudy didn't make this explicit, but Frank Marshall Davis was very anti-American. And you can go to Dreams from My Father for an account of that. The last thing that Barack Obama does before he leaves Hawaii for Occidental College is he pays a visit to Frank Marshall Davis. And Obama there quotes Frank at length, just ripping into the American way. In fact, I checked in my book yesterday because I wanted to see how many references I could find on it. 39 references in my book to Frank Marshall Davis sarcastically referring to the American way. He was very bitter. He didn't like this country. He actually joined the Communist Party under Stalin when the party was pledged to, quote, ensure the triumph of Soviet power in the United States and create a Soviet America.
In other words, the destruction of this country. I mean, let's put a fine point on it. And again, the sort of making common cause that the left has done so much of with these Islamists, Muslim Brotherhood types, many of them, that was sort of evident in his relationship with Rashid Khalidi, as I recall,
right.
a prime apologist for and enabler of Yasser Arafat in this country. But there seem to be so many of these things that keep cropping up. And I just would invite you to talk about net neutrality and the hollowing out of the military and the sort of agenda of diminishing America's standing in the world as he raises up our enemies.
It all goes together. And people will say all the time, okay, so you're saying that Obama was sympathetic to Islam, may have even been a Muslim for a point as a child. So what are you saying now, that five times a day he quietly, privately bows to Mecca? So we had this mentor named Frank Marshall Davis, who's a Communist Party member. So are you saying that he's a closet card-carrying member of Communist Party USA? No, the left always does this. They'll take it and they'll caricature it. No, what we are saying is that all of this stuff, when you add it together, helps explain why we have this man who's so far to the left. It all goes together. All of this stuff in the background, these are all key, formative, ideological, even religious influences in the man who's now sitting in the White House.
Yeah. And Paul Kanger, the point is that it's not just, you know, where he sits politically or physically, for that matter, but it's what the policies are that he's pursuing. And that's really where we focus on it, of course, so heavily here is on the national security piece. And speaking of which, I just want to draw you out because you have done, among other things, we've talked about the communists, we've talked about dupes, but two other extraordinarily important of your books, The Judge, William P. Clark, Ronald Reagan's Top Hand, and a personal favorite of mine, The Crusader, about President Reagan's program for victory over Soviet communism. We have at the Center for Security Policy, in a kind of homage to President Reagan's National Security Decision Directive 75, dusted it off and said, hey, here's a good workable strategy for defeating a totalitarian ideology trying to destroy us. I know you haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but I would be very interested in your thoughts about the advisability of sort of adapting NSDD 75 to the present era. Paul Kinger.
Yeah, I think this is great, Frank. This is the kind of really innovative stuff that you and you guys do at the Center for Security Policy. But the NSDD 75 came out January 17th, 1983. It was shepherded by Bill Clark at Reagan's National Security Council, and Richard Pipes, the great Harvard professor of Russian history, he helped write it in those first couple years of the Reagan NSC. And what this did was this laid out a grand strategy, a plan for taking down and defeating the primary international enemy at the time, which was Soviet communism. And we are completely lacking anything like that today. So I love this concept.
This is where we hope to come in. Paul Kenger, this is a subject for a much longer conversation. I look forward to having it with you very soon. Thank you for this extraordinary corpus of biographies and analyses and histories that make, I know, your teaching at Grove City College of such inestimable importance to your students and frankly, for the rest of us as well. We'll look forward to a further chat soon. Next up, Peter Brooks joins us from the Heritage Foundation about why Obama's telegraphing a punch at Mosul. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.